You know, something, Bill, you mentioned, which obviously as independent booksellers you kind of mixed feelings about, but people who live in the middle of nowhere, they don't have access, physical access, to a place like Book Passage or Kepler's or Powell's in Portland. Their access is that Barnes & Noble that's sitting in a small town in Lincoln, Nebraska. And that's where they have to go, and they've been delighted, just like people are delighted by a Starbucks in the middle of nowhere, even though, yeah, they might want really great coffee, but Starbucks is certainly better than, the diner down the block. Are those Barnes & Nobles and Borders, are they now in real trouble as well?
Well, Borders has been in trouble for a number of years, and they're in the hands of the creditors, and every month everyone kind of waits to see what's going to happen next. I think Barnes & Noble's sales in stores have been declining. I think it's a much stronger company than Borders, although Barnes & Noble is now going through an internal shareholders fight, and who knows where that's going to lead. The idea of the chain store in a little town somewhere in middle America, that's the only store. If, in fact, that's the only store there, and, of course we would support, have absolutely no objection to chain stores doing that sort of thing. I would probably want to go back and look at the story, roll it back about 10 years, 20 years, and see how many independent stores there were in that same town that were forced out of business when the chain came in. But again, that's ancient history. I think that if the chain stores want to revive themselves and to become a positive force in the business, I think they ought to look at the places where the communities aren't served by good independent stores, and that's where they ought to go.
Andy Ross, as an agent, I know that like back in the 80s, there was a retrenchment in the publishing field and a whole slew of new companies arose, again, later bought up, kind of like the indies in Hollywood. Are we going to be seeing a bunch of new, smaller presses that have the cachet of a North Point? I mean, is that where we're going, or is this a completely different time now?
Well, I think we're already there. There are some healthy aspects to publishing. Even large commercial publishing is expanding the number of imprints that they have, and there's a significant amount of diversity there. But there, at the same time, there's a lot of pressure to sell books that are, no less than 30,000 copies. So a lot of great books don't have that market. They maybe have a potential to sell 10,000 or even 5,000. And there's a lot of independent publishers of various sizes that I do a lot of business with them, and they don't have expectations that large publishers have. I do a lot of political books that probably the listeners here might be interested in, but there's places like Polypoint Press, which is local, The New Press in New York, Beacon Press. Those are publishers I really love, Chicago Review Press, and I send a lot of my authors there. And they understand these kinds of books better. They know how to market them, and they have expectations that are reasonable. You don't get big advances from them. Usually the advances are less than $10,000. In some ways, it's really better to be with a smaller press because they will understand the book. They'll nurture the book. They'll keep it in print. If you're published by Random House and your book doesn't perform, they'll put it out of print very quickly. But if you're published by Beacon Press, for the same number of books, they will be very happy with, and they will keep it in print, and they will continue promoting it for years. And I really believe in these publishers, and I don't think they're going away, because books are not really, with the exception of your Sarah Palin and some of the other ones, they're not like movies, mass market kinds of products. They have very small, discrete audiences, and they need these smaller presses, and they're going to, if anything, they're going to proliferate.
Do these small presses, at Book Passage and Kepler's, do you keep a special eye out for them, understanding that they'll fall by the wayside in a place like Amazon?
Yeah, we deal with small presses all the time, and we deal with them through through distributors to kind of amass a whole series of small presses and distribute them to us. But there is one thing I wanted to add to what Andy was saying, and that is I think there is a growing trend in this country for basically authors taking charge of their own literary work and doing some form of self-publishing. Last year, I think it was something like 700,000 self-published books in America, which is a huge number compared to prior years. And it used to be this was considered sort of a vanity thing, and this was these are books that are going nowhere. I think it's becoming more sophisticated. I know we as a bookstore are looking closely at how we could work with self-published and authors in the community and people who don't, who not necessarily don't want to self-publish, but want to publish with relatively low expectations and want to work through the community.
Well, that's publishing on demand, POD. That's a completely different world.
Not necessarily publishing on demand. Publishing on demand is books are produced one at a time off through from an online source. I'm talking about that plus also having a very modest print run, maybe 500 or 1,000 books available in a local store. And we work all the time with authors in the community who have self-published, and they bring the books in the store. We sometimes have very good events with them. Sometimes they're some of our biggest success stories.
Well, also, while you're talking about distribution, there used to be two or three large distributors of these smaller presses. How many exist now?
Gee, I don't know. There's probably a dozen of them anyway. I don't know which you consider large. I mean, they're all relatively small, but there are several of them around the country.
But we have seen the demise of Book People in Berkeley and the changes that happened at Publishers Group West, where small presses had a real voice and a strong distribution.
A lot of the large publishers now are also distributors of small press. It's a separate business, but they have very sophisticated billing and shipping infrastructures, and they have good sales force. Random House has very good publishers that they distribute for.
One other point about small publishers and self-publishers, two of the most important books that are on best-selling lists now are Tinkers by Paul Harding, which won a Pulitzer and was published by a very small press and then picked up by major press, and also Matterhorn, which was published by Tom Farber in Berkeley with his Leon Press and picked up by Grove and is now, you know, it's a best-selling Vietnam book. So sometimes you can do self-publishing and the big publishers look at you and say, hey, that was terrific. We missed it. Now we want it. That's another beauty of working at Book Passages, that I see writers every day who are taking our classes who are earnest in, you know, making the breakthrough. So there's still a lot of opportunity.
Three books that are out now that people may not know about that you can go ballistic recommending. Clark Kepler, a book that's selling in Kepler's right now that most people don't know about and people are raving about.
What I want to describe, there's a book written called Encounters by a woman whose husband, it's essentially his memoir that she has annotated after his death, and it is about an experience in the Philippines and being a 16-year-old in the Philippines, and really tells a breadth of experience in a lifetime that is quite phenomenal. Nancy Forster is the author, and it's a remarkable locally published book that may not ever get major distribution.
Okay, I've got one. This is a little self-serving because I represent this book and I sold it, but it's still a great book, and it's been nominated for the Saroyan Prize. It's called Surviving Paradise. It's a memoir it's by Peter Rudiak Gould, who grew up in Berkeley. It's a memoir of his year in the Marshall Islands, the most remote place on earth. And it is a beautifully written book, extremely funny, very entertaining, an exotic location. And I feel like I discovered him. He was a 24-year-old graduate student in Oxford, and this is a magnificent book.
One that I love recently is by Leslie Larson, who is a San Francisco writer, and she wrote a book called Breaking Out of Bedlam. It is a wacky story of an older woman who's institutionalized by her family, who gets a journal from her granddaughter and starts writing and discovers who she is as she's in the last years of her life, and it's just hysterical, outrageous, and wonderful, and it's called Breaking Out of Bedlam.
The bookstore does something else. And the record store used to do it, and I guess if you go into a Barnes & Noble and look through their CDs and DVDs, you see it, which is the browsing element. And so let me ask all of you, what percentage of your business do you think simply comes from someone walking in, browsing, and picking? Because you can't do that online.
A huge percentage. And not only just people walking in and finding something and not knowing what they wanted when they came in, but coming in for a particular book and finding another one at the same time, or talking to a bookseller or even to another customer saying, I like this, what do you like, and finding a whole new world open up to them. I think that's the major advantage that bookstores have and will continue to have, and that online sales and big box stores simply can't replicate. And that's the idea that you can walk in and talk to somebody and find something new. It really is a people business.
And with that, I mean, that serendipitous moment is so critical to our businesses. Citizens, consumers need to, I believe, recognize that when they just want convenience, they have an option of maybe going into the store rather than just doing the most convenient thing, because they will lose that eventually if the other half of their purchasing, when they know what they're after, is done in the most convenient and fastest way. You can't have it both ways. If they want to be able to have a bookstore and that experience, the community of a bookstore, we need to, as consumers, spend our money accordingly.
I think it's interesting that Amazon.com, which is very sophisticated, has tried to recapitulate that kind of serendipitous experience. And whenever you are looking at a book, down below they'll see all these other comparable books. But I think it's important to remember, and most people don't know this, that in order to get there, you have to pay Amazon.com money. And if you don't, though, you may have a book that would be comparable and the consumer might want, it won't be down there. You won't see it.
So what you're saying is, when it says, if you like this, you might also like this, it's because they're paying for that to show up.
That.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just thinking about this is that without all these problems, Cody's would still be alive. And yet, at the same time, you know, Book Passage and Kepler's would not be doing the kind of things in the community, such as the classes. Cody's wouldn't have had to go out and have all of these author readings. So in a weird way, all of this somehow benefits us. I mean, I know it sounds really strange. Would Book Passage be having the classes if they didn't have to?
Sure.
You think so?
Yeah, we started doing them 20 years ago because we liked to do it. I mean, the classes of Book Passage started when Anne Lamott was just breaking in as an author and she needed some way to make some money. We said, how would you like to have a little reading, right? Store in the class, in the class here in the store, and we'll have people come in, and about 100 people signed up. We thought, whoa, that's kind of interesting. Maybe we ought to expand that. And it was a way, we've always felt competitive pressure from the time we started, but it wasn't – the idea behind classes was not directly related to the idea of Amazon or anybody else coming along. This was my wife's idea, Elaine Petricelli. She came up with it, and Leslie's implementing it.
All stores are adapting now. Some stores have cafes. For a while, stores were selling Beanie Babies and making a lot of money. So everybody's adapting in whatever ways they can to satisfy the public's need.
Leslie, let me ask you, let's go back to Cody's for one second. In retrospect, is there any way Cody's could have survived?
One of the truths about running a business is that you're living 125% of it. So had we had the ability to take 6 months off and stand back and do an analysis, there are ways that we might have changed, but what we would have changed into wouldn't have been Cody's. And I don't think it was within our imagination to imagine anything but Cody's, because it was a beautiful store and it was so successful and it changed so many people's lives.
And in terms of publishing itself, what can listeners do? Is there anything that anybody can do, or do we just sit back and kind of just try to buy from better places and that's about it?
I still agree with everything that's been said about independent stores. As an agent now and at representing authors, I kind of have a somewhat of a mixed feeling towards chain stores because they sell a lot of my authors' books. But I still believe that bookstores, and particularly independent stores, have so enriched communities that if the day comes that all books are downloaded or online, that will be a great loss for every community in America, because bookstores are really the heart and soul of the spiritual life of any community. And without them, we will in many ways become spiritually impoverished.
It sounds to me overall that it's a struggle, but I think there's a sense of optimism because there's something the independent stores can do and can give that a corporate store cannot, and certainly you can't get online.
Yeah, we're also more stubborn. No, I do think that. I think that the key to a survival of an independent store is being real close to the community it serves and trying to be a part of the community and having the community understand that this is the place you go when you want to find out about new books and new ideas.
We do try to listen to our customers who are asking all the time what it is that we can do to better serve them. So we're always open to improving and meeting their needs.
You've been listening to a discussion about the future of independent bookstores with Andy Ross, formerly of Cody's and now a book agent, Bill Petricelli of Book Passage in Corte Madera, Clark Kepler of Kepler's Books in Menlo Park on the peninsula, and with Leslie Berkler, who organizes the classes for Book Passage. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.